when I was small and we used to go to temples, I was taught about the importance of including everybody. This is something which is called inclusion. And I was said that God does not bias. And yet I saw an extremely detailed, oriented caste system-based chart on who could touch the idol of the Lord and who could not. I couldn't do so because A, I was a woman, and B, I belonged to a lower caste. And as long as I think now, my dear listeners, I did not find the answers to why was I banned from touching the idol of the Lord. And I turned to education. Like everybody said, education did have the answers. And I soon learned that science, which was the subject that we were being taught, is the one where we seek the actual truth. So I thought to myself, I had been banned from touching idols at temples. Would I be banned from education as well? Turns out I would not. Yet I saw and read about people who identify the same sexuality as I did, who liked me, were being ridiculed and mocked for the work that they were doing in science, eventually causing their work to be underrepresented. The question of why diversity is important in science raised in my head again and again and again from time to time as I was in research. Why do we see science from a singular narrative, my dear listeners? Why do we see science from a singular perspective? Earlier, I used to think, Mahima, all these questions are just in your head. All these questions, my dear listeners, and I find somebody out there, somebody who's asking the same questions as I do. How beautiful is the power of the internet, right? To realize that you're not completely insane for thinking all of this. I have with me today Tyus D. Williams, who is currently a PhD student at UC Berkeley. He's interested by how large mammalian carnivores not only interact with their environments during disturbances, but also engage and compete with similar species around them. I called Tyus on my show because of a tweet that I read back in 2020, and it changed the way that I looked at diversity in science. We'll talk about this tweet later in the conversation, but I would like to also say that Tyus is a brilliant science communicator who loves utilizing Twitter to disseminate information to the public, as well as answer questions from time to time. He is also creator of SciQ Friday, where each week he hosts a special guest for a live chat over Twitter about their work. He creates amazing reels on Instagram, which are so thought-provoking and so full of life. Tyus seemed like the perfect person to have conversation with regarding diversity in academia, and as a Black neurodivergent ecologist, the thoughts that he shared with me throughout this conversation had a deeply and profound impact on me.
Okay, so I have Tyus with me, and I've already introduced you to the listeners a bit, but then I want you to tell listeners a little bit about yourself, about your love for wildlife, and what has shaped you into who you are currently. So go for it, Tyus.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, you want me to go for it?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. So, oh, no, sorry. My name is Tyus Williams. I am a PhD candidate at UC Berkeley. I'm in the Department of Environmental Science, Policy, and Management. I'm an NSF graduate research fellowship. Well, I'm a graduate research fellow. I'm currently studying the intersections of how essentially urban environments potentially can exacerbate the ecological effects that free roaming domestic cats have as an introduced or invasive non-native species in here in the Bay Area, in East Bay particularly. Mm-hmm. I think the ways to introduce myself is, let's see what else. I did my undergraduate at the University of Georgia in fisheries and wildlife science. I graduated with fisheries and wildlife science degree, and I did my senior thesis on jaguars. But I think to kind of just introduce myself a little bit, I am somebody that has an insatiable desire to learn about the natural world, but not only to learn and then to absorb and sequester all this information as much as possible, as I have an insatiable appetite to learn about these things, but I also have, I feel like, a true passion to share this information with other people, and the compassion to make sure that this information and this infectious love that I have for the natural world and animals is accessible and it's free to others as well, because feel like people should be as excited about the natural world and the planet as much as I am. But I know that that's not always the case. Some people could care less about, some people could care less about a really particular type of insect or a bug. But to me, I think it's like, if I can just get the energy to them just to connect, if I can just maybe like just slightly ignite that small conflagration inside of their heart that makes them just think a little bit differently about either that plant or maybe that insect that they think is a nuisance species or a pest, but maybe it really not, can really change the course of how we coexist with this world and the animals and the spaces that we're surrounded with. Because we're all in it together and nothing exists in a vacuum. If anything, it's all deeply entangled with each other. And so I think that shapes a deep component to who I am. And I think my philosophies and my principles are based off of, empathy-oriented solutions is what I like to say. It's like my new thing that I've been saying, like empathy-oriented research solutions. Like, not only how am I using the empiricism to inform these issues and solve these on a policy or management or, wildlife science-based issue, but also like the empathy that goes into considering the community care when you have this really diverse composite of like communities and identities within an area or within a community that should be concerned with the effects of what happens, with the management policies that go in place when it comes to how we when we do the research or the work that we do. And I think to open up with that really, really broad statement to really say a little bit about myself, I'm somebody that has a big heart for the world, and I'm definitely somebody that has a big heart for people too.
It's pretty evident by the way that you're talking right now. So yeah, I understand what you're saying. Also, Tyus, followed you on Twitter for quite some time now, and it's pretty evident, like the way that you talk about science, it's sort of infectious, I would like to say. And you have been an active advocate of science communication for really long. So I want to ask you something that I envision, which is I envision a society where scientific literacy is the topmost priority, right? So, do you share the same thoughts as I do?
Yeah, I think for me, I feel like you can't really have a conversation with science literacy being, I would say a priority or an emphasis of, I think, like educational investment without also acknowledging the economic or the, I would say at least the systemic disparities that exist, at least here in the US. I'm not sure how it functions, particularly in different areas of the globe. I imagine in some circumstances, STEM is a leading, is a leading discipline in some areas because they really do care a lot about it. But I think it's one of acknowledging the parallels of opportunity and accessibility, but then also recognizing the disinformation campaigns that are actively going on in our political society as well. But I definitely think like there is a dearth of scientific literacy in our society here, especially in the US. And it not only deeply concerns me, but it troubles me to know that some of the best scientists that we possibly could have, we don't have as a function of either exclusion or a lack of accessibility, either when it comes to updated curriculums or programs or people who come from low-income communities that are excluded from these types of communities that functions as this, sometimes this arcane elite, exclusive society of like only the select few have the capacity to participate in science, when really science should be for everybody. It's science is a tool that everybody should be able to have access to, because everybody has access to science and has the capacity to understand science, we allows us to equitably may be able to make decisions with actual fundamental knowledge that is evidenced in empirically based to make the best decisions that we can moving towards the society. And we all benefit from that as we progress. But we can only do that when everybody has the ability to make those decisions for themselves because they've been given all the information available to them and they've been educated properly to do so. And if they choose to pursue that too and having the opportunities to do so. But yeah, I would say it's definitely up there for me. I mean, like within the next decade or so, I mean, it seems to me from what I've seen, like the political, the course that we're going in this society, I think scientific literacy will probably be one of the most important things to like invest in when it comes to like our education system, because the basic blatant lies, or I think like the willful ignorance that I think I see in a lot of people that either deny the pure evidence that obviously derives from just, whether it's evolutionary science or whether it's just biological facts or just like the idea of like not understanding particularly like how life-changing, how radically foundational the COVID vaccination was to saving millions and millions of lives. which was preventing the mortality rate by like 75%, which is a huge, huge, huge deal. So much to the point that some of the innovators and themselves, I think, won Nobel Prizes for like their medical breakthroughs among that research. It's like being able to actually actively have a healthy amount of skepticism, but then to have the actual tools necessary to follow through with critical thinking skills to take your thought from A to B and then finish at point D, and then be able to come to a actually concise conclusion about like what's actually happening and using the best pieces of evidence that you have available to you, then to then make a decision for yourself. And I'd love to see more of that. I'd love to see people actually be able to help have a healthy manner of interrogating the world, but not operating under a delusion at the same time. And so I would say, yeah, I definitely would probably. We probably share very similar values, and I do think science literacy is paramount, if not probably one of the biggest priorities, next to many other social and human rights issues.
Also, like Atais, we've been talking about you being on social media for a while, and you've been promoting science communication there. So, for me, social media is like this portal of knowledge. Like you just type something, and there are like these endless portals that you go through, with everything being so different. It's like imagining like just okay, 1,000 doors in front of you, and you can go through any of them, and maybe like the information next door is something that is something that you don't want. It's untrue, but you are still consuming it. So, as it turns out, people do love consuming misinformation and spreads so much faster as compared to information, as compared to actual research that is being done. That's the problem with science communication as well. I feel like researchers to get more funding, sometimes I have seen this, they try to, put into headlines something else when they put out research news story or something in Wired or something in Scientific American that sounds so good to be true. There was this article about semiconductors that came recently that they had found room temperature semiconductors, and that is revolutionary,
Interesting.
but it was untrue because the critical temperature was way too high for it when in the paper when we read it. So the headlines were something else, and I saw something else on Scientific American. So what are your thoughts on this? Why does misinformation prevail over information? Is our society bound to, and as people who are doing science, is it's our responsibility to tell other people that what is happening in laboratories without any filters is what I would like to ask you.
No, that's a really good question, gosh. And I don't even know if I have like a really maybe a succinct answer for that, but I could certainly take a crack at, I think, maybe disentangling, I think, some of those elements there to the best of my abilities. I think for me, I think humans, when you think about, I think the funny thing about humans, I've said this for a long time, I was talking to somebody else about it, but just like, I don't think we really talk enough about the fact the sequence or the proportions, not even the proportions, I think about the parallels of how fascinating it is. I mean, like the human species as hominids, we go back about 2.5 million years, but as modern humans, we've only really been around for about like 100,000 years or so when we really think about our inception as like as a modern like species that actually has like, tool buildings, like the way that we use tools to like advance ourselves as a society. And then you just get in even to like, agrarian civilizations as well, where we have pre-capitalist agrarian societies as well. But just like, let's just say like post late Quaternary, the last ice age going into leaving that glaciation period and going into the megafauna period where you had like the Miocene and the Pleistocene, and where there was the mass megafauna extinction. So let's say about like 10, 20,000 years ago. I think the sequence of events that preceded our ability to not only derive particular skill sets and tool usage to advance our civilizations, but also the mass acceleration of technological advancements, faster than our own intellect can keep up with. I think we really don't talk enough about that. Actually, how fascinating it is. Like we're accelerating faster than our capacity as a species has to keep up with it. And that's going to inherently come with some, I think, some faulty circumstances and some errors, I think, when you think about the totality of like how we as a species think about either the ethics of how we use technology, but then implement it and even try to correct for it when we recognize. And I feel like because of that, I think when you think of the history of the fact that, Oral storytelling in humans goes back about like 25,000 years. But you think of that whole idea that, like, it's the fisherman's tale. Like, the fish always gets a little bit larger every single time they tell it, like, that the next person tells a
Yes.
story. I think
Yeah.
humans have a natural tendency to confabulate a little bit. I think we like the idea of pushing the boundaries of a story to catch the attention of listeners, and it's not because I think that humans inherently like lying, but I think it's humans like capturing the attention, and I think almost but by any means necessary. But it's like, how do we as a society almost kind of how do we try to control for, I think, like this natural tendency that we have, that's something that I think that's probably like encoded into our beings when it comes to storytelling, or maybe like embellishing a little bit more than we usually should. And I think what's interesting is, I think it's a matter of, like, I think it's an ethics thing. I think it's an ethics. I think it's a language thing too, which is really fascinating if you get into the linguistics of like storytelling, because like the number of times that I have, or my headline or my title for my paper, I want it to be a very specific thing. I want it to say a very specific thing. I'll be with my advisors, and he'd be like, I don't think this is the title for the paper. It's like, I think we should like, or like, we think we should reframe it this way. It's not wrong in the way that we're reframing it or contextualizing it, because the reality is that it's like, I get the points, because at the end of the day, it's strategic. Like, humans are very visual and emotionally triggered. We're very emotionally triggered creatures. You're walking behind and you see a headline, you're like, supernova, like, implodes, like galaxy sucks into itself. It's like, okay, that's a headline I want to read. Like, and it's like, then you read it and it's like, well, the supernova, like, or the star could implode at any second, but we don't really know whether it's going to create like
Where
a
it is
black
going.
hole or not.
Yep.
And then you're like, well, okay, well, like, that's the complete opposite of the headline. But it's like, but what it is saying is that it's theoretically possible if you think about the dynamic of astrophysics, because we know that this can happen with supernovas. And so it's like what they're doing, it's like it feels like it's all a little bit of like a teaser, but I do notice sometimes it is frustrating, because I agree with the idea of the thousand doors, and you're walking through one, but each door next to you is filled with an oversaturation of lies and misinformation. And I do think there is
Yes.
probably some point right now when we're talking about the technology and media and our widespread access to media too, especially considering that more accessible internet is covering the globe. I definitely think there is a question to definitely be had by either computer scientists or internet providers, or computer companies, or whoever is basically kind of really launching maybe these large mobile platforms or applications like Twitter and Instagram or Threads, or whatever mediums or platforms that people like to use. Definitely having a question on how we regulate and control for essentially misinformation. And one of the things I love about Twitter is that they have the user feedback, or like the public
Yeah.
reviews, where it's like somebody can basically publicly check and be like, this is wrong, and people can like rate it and score it. I think that's one of the best things that's recently been introduced to the X platform, outside of the Musk takeover being generally, being on fire, and since he took over in his tenure. But I definitely think there's something to be said with, like, I think public accountability. I think with the ways in which like we tell people information, but then like being open to fact checking too, because I definitely think there's some resistance along those layers as well. It's not just that misinformation is willingly spread, but I definitely think there's a natural pattern and behavior within human society where people abstain from being open to correction. And I
Correction.
think it's
Yep.
because the idea of correction itself is either internalized as an idea of, like, let's say, like ignorance or a lack of intellect, or whatever, how somebody wants to like perceive it in terms of those, like, either character flaws or like, or lack thereof in terms of particular skill sets or perception. But nobody wants to feel faulty. And I think because of that, people would rather error on the side of caution, on the idea that they can rely on their own information in their head, rather than be open to, kind of accepting the correction from experts in the field, rather than taking it as a personal form of like attack, or interrogation. And it's not, it's just we're trying to provide the facts. And so I definitely think there's a larger dialogue to be happened there, when it's like, when we think about just internet usage and the ethics of how we use that, and like what our responsibility is to each other when we're sharing information.
I agree with whatever you said. Tyson, I want to end this episode by talking about diversity a bit, if that's okay with you. Like, I want to
Yeah.
hear your thoughts on diversity, because there's this viral tweet about you, which said, and I don't know, It's like very close to my heart now. So thank you for writing it. It said how beautifully, like, we have, as you know, humans accepted the diversity in nature. We are trying to actively, you know, take care of species around us. But
Yes.
inherently, we are broken as species because we don't care about whether each of
Yeah.
us, when our neighbor is dying or there are wars going on. And this is something that I want to hear your thoughts on. What was going on in your head when you wrote it? Firstly, can you tell me that? Because it's such a beautiful tweet. And your thoughts on diversity. Why is it
Yeah, well,
important?
I really appreciate that. That's yeah, that is probably, I think, maybe one of my best tweets, I think, out of my thoughts and the
I
way the
love
prose.
it.
I do
I
love, yeah,
really
I've been
love it.
writing. No,
I
thank
think
you. It
like
really
I
means
have
a lot to me.
shared this with my professors, what you wrote, and they were really moved. And I shared this
Yeah.
with my friends also. So like, yeah, it's really beautiful.
Thank you so much. No, it means a lot to me, and no, I'm appreciating love from many parts of the world. It means a lot to me. So thank you for much so much today. That's like starting my day off super strong. Like way to just start my Sunday off. I really appreciate this. So thank
I'm
you very
glad.
much. And I think what was going on in my head at that time, gosh, like when did I write that? Was that like a couple of years ago? Was it 2020 or is
2020.
that 2020?
I
Yeah,
remember because
2020.
I was at home. Yeah.
I think there was so much going on politically. I think in 2020, like I think COVID was starting, or at the time COVID like wasn't starting, but there was warnings of an incoming, like, you know, infectious disease that was going to touch ground on, like, you know, US soil. I think there was just so much. I'm so sensitive, especially as somebody who's like neurodivergent. I think for me, I think because I function through it and I operate in a duality as a Black person, as a Black person who's neurodivergent, who has ADHD, who's on the autism spectrum as well. Like, I think like the way that I move through the world, I have this capacity, I feel like, to see and reach people where they are, to meet people where they are when it comes to like their passions or their interests or their identities. It doesn't matter who it is. I feel like I just have the ability to like hold their hand and like walk with them in their pathway for just even a brief moment if it helps comfort them a little bit more, but to let them know that they're seen. And I think because of the way that I've struggled with my own sense of, I think, like lonesomeness and invisibility, or my own experiences of like feeling ostracized or socially excluded. When you have this very unconventional identity and personality, you know, you're autistic and you're Black, you're perceptive, but people don't understand your perceptions. You have to constantly explain yourself, but you have to justify your physical existence in a world that doesn't see your physical existence when there's like a lot of anti-Blackness, like inherently in the country that I reside in. And I think for me, like because of that, such an intimate experience emotionally, I look at so much of the disarray and chaos in human society, whether it's geopolitical issues or whether it's local political issues on a state level. And I just like, and as much as humans, as much as we as a species have this innate, inherent attribute of curiosity and exploration and like in, I think, an amusement, and I think in I think in I think fawning over the beauty and the vestiges of the natural world, it sometimes it breaks my heart because it's like, as much as we adore and are enamored by wildlife in all sorts of places that are seem like a dream and a paradise that can still be found, you know, in a tropical forest in far away, I'm like, I wish our passion and I wish our appreciation for animals was equivalent to the way that we respected was equivalent, or was at least replicated in a similar way, where we appreciated human diversity and our difference in the same manner, because it's also what makes us stronger and better as a people inherently and like irrefutably. We obviously not even not, it's not even just in a subjective statement. It's actually like empirically justified too, that diversity is like really good for societies. And it's because, I mean, people are so cool. I mean, like, in humans are really cool. We're capable of some really incredible things. I feel like there's just a lot of misanthropy, like later, like a lot lately. I just feel like people look at humans and I think people are just like, we really need to go extinct. And I'm like, I'm not sure who's saying that. It's like, but I feel like it's coming from very particular demographics of people who feel like we would all be better if there was less of us. But it's like, not everybody is responsible for like the destruction of this planet. It's like, and you can't just task like a total and utter annihilation in the oblivion of the entire human species because you're disappointed with how capitalists and egotistical maniacs and megalomaniacs have governed majority of like the first world, you know, national super nations, like, you know, or superpower nations. And it's like, And to me, I think that's really frustrating as somebody who watches the world quite literally burn. But you have some of the most peaceful and kindest people who live in solitude, maybe in a jungle far away because they are unbothered with the, you know, with the self-obsession of technological advancements and the consumption of like consumerism in a capitalist society. And to me, that's beautiful. I'm like, and who are we to say to destroy their lifestyles merely because you're disappointed and you hate yours because it's so agonizing. And so I just
Yes.
like, I feel like if we had a little bit more appreciation for our neighbors, if we had a little bit more patience with our neighbors, if we were willing to just stop for a moment and see people for who they are and try to meet people where they're at. And I also believe in like to not tolerate intolerance too, because I definitely think there's a point where like, you know, like hate and bigotry and I think like, you know, forms of you know, othering, I think is also like not tolerable. So I definitely think that there's a time and place where we create space for each other, but also hold each other accountable for I think deplorable behavior. But it
Yes.
really would be wonderful if I feel like for every, you know, indigo bunting or every, you know, painted bunting that we see that flies across the canvas of the skies, and we feel like it comes from something out of a watercoloring book. I wish that we could see this, see people in the same way where we see somebody embracing all that they are as an individual and just be like, wow, like that's a person who owns who they are and like that's beautiful. And I think that would just be really wonderful to see. And I hope that we can achieve that. I think for me, in my lifetime, when I'm gone, long and gone, I like to be able to at least say maybe before I'm gone, I can look back at the world and be able to say, you know, maybe there is more hope for us as a collective because maybe we can actually like pull this off. And I think that's something I think I really want for all of us because I think we desperately need it too.
I mean, you should probably write a book on this, just like we've written books on Cat, I think. The Big Book of
Yes, I
Cats.
have.
Yes. Maybe you can write a book on diversity and your thoughts on it. I'll be the one promoting it for sure, because
Oh,
those are
well, I
beautiful thoughts. Those
you're
are
that'll be the
beautiful
first.
thoughts.
You'll be the first to know. Thank you. I really
These
appreciate
are
that. It's
the thoughts that I want to hear and I want people to hear. And thank you so much for saying all of that out loud, because I don't know, Tyus, like a lot of times, especially like, I don't know, obviously I come from a third world nation, right? So there's
yeah.
this biasness when we go out to look at us as people who are inferior, because you're coming from a first
Absolutely.
world nation. And if I were
Yeah.
to come to America right now, I know how I would be treated. My friends are there currently who are doing PhD. Some of them are in UC Berkeley itself. And they tell me the kind of biasness that goes within the classes itself. If the way that you described about diversity and the way that I think like it should be taught everywhere, not just in sciences, but in general to people in schools, I think like we would be successful as, you know, species who are living together in harmony, but that is like a dream which is like way too far right now. So thank you so much for saying all that. You should definitely write this. I am not kidding.
Yes, I should expand on it a little bit more. I think it'd
Yeah.
be like a
No,
really
I
good
am
like
not
opening
kidding.
statement. Yeah.
This was beautiful. Thank you so much for talking about these
Yeah.
issues. And it was like amazing talking to you and hosting you, Tyus. Anything that you want to tell to people who are interested in SciComm and science out there? Any like
I think
concluding
my
words?
only I think just my only conclusions I think I'd have for all the science nerds out there is that you know, your passion is your own, and I think your character is your own, and it's not replicable. So don't discount your unique perceptions of the world because there's only one version of yourself, and it's really important to remember that because it's easy to feel like we're missing things to be the best scientist that we're supposed to be, or we have this idea that we're supposed to just have this inherent savantism when it comes to entering the sciences. But it's I think this superficial fantasy that I think has been like constructed, I think, in the Western world of like what science is and how it's praised and how people take pride in it. But once again, science in itself, once and always, and will always truly be a tool that anybody can build a skill on. It is a skill set. Sure, some people are really good at it, you know, naturally, but like anything, you can get better at something over time. And the people who put more energy and effort to it anyways tend to always come out to be the most successful. Practice always precedes and beats talent. Always it does in effort. And I think So it's just always a reminder, because imposter syndrome is real. It's easy to feel discouraged, but it's always remember to know deep down that there's only one you, and you wouldn't be where you are if you weren't good at what you were doing. So
yeah, I mean, you should definitely write a book. I'm not kidding. Seriously, thank you so much, Cyrus, for coming.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
It was
amazing.
Yeah, it was amazing talking to you, meeting you, and your thoughts are just insane. I just want to tell you that tweet is something that I wanted to talk to you about in person, and I'm really glad that I got the opportunity to do so. Thank you so much for coming to my show again and speaking about issues that are close to my heart. And I really hope like a lot of people hear what you have.
Yeah. Well, I thank you so much for having me. It really is a pleasure to chat with you. And it really means a lot to me that like that statement, the tweet really hit you, because I think I was really thinking deeply about a lot when I wrote that. So I'm really glad it resonated with a lot of people. So
it did. It did. I mean, it really did. Like, it affected people all across the globe. So you can imagine.
Well, I love that. That really made my day. So
representation matters. Inclusion matters. A big, big, big thank you to Tyus for coming to my show and speaking about all these issues. I hope this conversation fosters more science educators to rethink the narrative of science, which is being fed from a single lens currently. And also, my dear listeners, you can follow Tyus on Twitter, on Instagram. The links are in the description of the episode. To you, my dear listeners, thank you so much for tuning in and for supporting my work. If you like my show, please make sure to follow the podcast on whatever platform you're listening it on. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing right now, I just hope that tomorrow brings a better day for you, and I'll see you in the next episode. Till then, stay warm, stay safe, and remember to incorporate inclusivity in whatever task you associate yourself with. Lots of love. Bye.